Midlands Today with Tullamore Opel, Church Road, Tullamore. Time to cross over the new Mokka. Test drive your 231 Opel Mokka at Tullamore Motors, Church Road, Tullamore. See tullamoremotors.ie. When people in the Midlands want to talk, they talk to Will Faulkner.
Well, good morning. How's your Tuesday going so far? Coming up today, exclusive news on a brand new extension for a Midlands hospital. Your chances of surviving cancer are 50% greater now than a decade ago. And Westmeath County Council passes a record budget. We'll take a look at what services will be bolstered, or indeed if there are any cutbacks within those numbers. When you call 0818 300 103 is my number. You can text, you can WhatsApp 083 30 10 103. Powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. Now, what's happening around the region and around the world? On the front of the Irish Independent, new squeeze on renters, it says, as thousands of landlords quit the market. And we've had some sense for a few years that landlords who fell into negative equity during the crash had used the recovery in prices to make a rather sharp exit. 43,000 is the number. 43,000 homes have been taken out of the rental market in the last 5 years. And you know the basic law of economics, supply and demand. Supply continues to go down. Demand remains constant. If anything, it's getting greater. And prices are inexorably going up. The main story on the Irish Times. Spiritans told to keep all records for possible inquiry. This coming at the direction of Minister Roderick O'Gorman, and his officials will discuss what form an inquiry may take and who will be asked to lead it. It's all very downbeat. Well, maybe a positive story. Yes, here's one on the front of the Irish Times also. Over 50% rise in cancer survivors in a decade. So we now have more than 200,000 people in this country who have had cancer and have lived to tell the tale, thank heavens. One in 24, to put it another way, one in 24 of us have survived the disease. Now, the main causes of death by cancer, lung cancer very much to the top, breast or prostate cancer by sheer volume, the number of people who get them. But thankfully, again, the survival rates for those cancers are better than some of the more internal forms, such as liver cancer, esophageal cancer. They are the ones to avoid. Let's see, where will we go next? What are the tabloids talking about today? Pride and Passion is on the front of the Mirror. That's a reference to football in the UK. And they're hoping, on the front of the Sun in the UK as well, that there would be a first all-British World Cup clash if Wales and England can prevail. Well, that's tonight, 7 o'clock, for those who will be watching. The front of the Irish Examiner. Celtic Tiger developer has €170 million in debts written off. This is a developer in Cork, and it seems the Celtic Tiger has returned to the news today. Not alone a developer getting a massive write-off, but also bankers' bonuses are back. How do you feel about that one? Because, as was pointed out on the main morning news by People Before Profit, bankers were motivated. They were encouraged. They were given the carrot and stick in the form of bonuses to go and borrow and allow borrowing to be excessive, unwise, even reckless in some cases, all in the pursuit of profit. And if bankers are similarly motivated again by bonuses, will history repeat itself? Now, of course, the opposing argument is if you want to attract the very best and brightest into the banking sector, And it's not a very competitive space in Ireland. Ulster Bank pulling out, KBC pulling out. Therefore, we need to pay for that talent. I'm sure you're looking at your coffee rather sceptically at the idea of having to pay hundreds and hundreds of thousands of euro in bonuses to get the best and the brightest in the banking sector. Anyway, that is the opposing argument, believe it, as you will. Good news from the National Lottery today. The €225,000 prize that was scooped at the Obama Plaza in Moneygall last week has been claimed. Now, the player wishes to remain private, but they have provided a quote saying they were so engrossed in the World Cup, they completely forgot to check their ticket. That was a lovely surprise the next day, wasn't it? So they went online, they had a look at the winning numbers, and words just cannot describe the feeling. It was a mixture of shock, disbelief and excitement. And the lady says, I had to check the numbers at least four or five times to be sure before I told my partner. But you know what the best bit is? So once you realise you've got this piece of paper in your hand and it's worth 225 grand, how do you keep it safe? Where do you put it? Well, in her case, she wrapped it in bubble wrap and hid it under her bed. And the partner remarked that she took better care of the ticket than she did him. So, you can never win sometimes. So, if you happen to have all of that money, what would you use it for? Well, road tolls are going to take a bigger slice next year if the Chief of Transport Infrastructure Ireland is correct. Because in the contracts, when the motorways were built and private companies came in on so-called public-private partnerships, in the small print, they got an increase every year in line with inflation. And inflation in the past 12 months has been around 10%, even a bit above. So if the state is to say, actually, sorry, Mr. Public-Private Partnership, you cannot have your increase this year, the state is going to either have to compensate them or there's going to be an even bigger increase in 2024. That is the choice, according to the Chief of Transport Infrastructure Ireland, who shall appear before the Oireachtas Transport Committee this evening. Politically, there are many opposing this, but the Green Party leader and the Minister for Transport, Eamon Ryan, has indicated in interviews he is accepting the increases. So the tolls will be going up if he has anything to do with it. Lovely story in the Irish Independent this morning, if you want to cast your mind back to how farming used to be. And it features Norma Cook from Castle Dermot in County Kildare. And when she was just 16, imagine now, the year was 1955. How difficult it would be for a 16-year-old to give orders to 12 grown men who were all farmhands. But she had to do that after her father suddenly became unwell. He had a stroke. He then had to go to England to see a specialist for his recovery. And so she had to direct orders on the farm. And it was a hell of an education, she says. And she is still farming to this very day. Lovely story in the Irish Independent. Now, a harrowing tale of a little boy in Wexford whose face will never be the same again after an encounter with a pit bull. This happened on Sunday, and he was playing with friends, as children do, kicking a ball around. And all of a sudden, this dog appeared out of nowhere at the Old Forge estate in Enniscorthy. And the family has provided photographs of the injuries to the Irish Independent, but they are too graphic to publish. Suffice to say, the poor child has no lower lip left. He cannot eat or breathe by himself. A tube has to be inserted into his neck. He is only 9. Only 9. And his whole future will be irrevocably different because of this. The dog has been destroyed. And the boy's brother is rightly asking who is going to pay for this. Not necessarily in the financial sense, although obviously the cost of his injuries and the cost of his rehabilitation will be substantial. But who is accountable? Anyway, it's not the first time we've heard about this. And it's one of those that the Gorthys struggle with, because very often dogs are unregistered. Owners disown them. It's not clear if that's happening in this case, I should stress. But again, animal welfare laws and animal laws in general are very weak in Ireland compared to other countries. Elon Musk is starting a war, he has declared, and the story is on thejournal.ie today. The world's richest man and owner of Twitter has Apple in his crosshairs. For one, he's annoyed they might take Twitter off the App Store. And for another, he's crying foul that they charge a 30% fee on all transactions through their App Store. What happens when the world's richest man takes on the world's richest company? This cannot end well, I suspect. Christmas lights. How are they looking in your local area? Some of the towns have already switched them on, and Mullingar makes the official switch-on ceremony this Friday, and Midlands 103 shall be there, by the way. Very much looking forward to it. But according to the Director of Retail Ireland, there are more Christmas lights than ever in people's homes, if not on the street. Because according to the Central Statistics Office, retail sales in Ireland for furniture and for lighting fell 6% in the year to October. But Arnold Dillon, who was the boss of Retail Ireland, believes we're going to see a huge rise in decorations in the coming days. By the way, tonight is going to be very cold. If you have any windows open, and I'm thinking we leave one window slightly open for the cat. Pussycat, you're staying outside tonight. It's -5 degrees on the weather forecast. Easterly winds heading for Ireland, which won't, by the way, bring snow. We don't have a beast from the east, but we will have freezing conditions, and indeed well below in many parts of the Midlands over the next 24 hours. Plan accordingly. And a final one, if you are the betting type. A guy has appeared on TikTok under the handle World Cup Time Traveller, and he claims to be from the future, and he knows who will be in the final of the World Cup and what the scoreline shall be. For the record, he says Brazil will defeat France on a scoreline of 2-1. Now, what's interesting about this, he had previously predicted very accurately the final of the Euros. And he even shared footage, which appears to be both the delayed Euro 2020 final and the upcoming World Cup 2022 final, which you would assume it has to be digitally doctored, this isn't real. But it has people thinking, why does it look so real? Why even are the commentators saying that Brazil have defeated France 2-1? Is he really from the future? Could it be? Might be worth a trip to the bookies anyway. 2-1 in favour of Brazil against France. Mind you, I doubt you'll get great odds on that anyway. I'd say Brazil would be favourites. Would they be your favourite? They'd have to be up there. Them, Spain, France. Poland could be an outside chance. What do you think yourself? A caller suggests, probably quite rightly, that the time traveller on TikTok is likely a bookie trying to get you to pile on Brazil versus France. We shall see in a few weeks' time, won't we? Teresa, regarding the pit bull attack, says, this is the reason that all dogs, and not just pit bulls, should be muzzled at all times. It's like when we had to wear masks during COVID. Dogs will have to get used to it. It is the only way to prevent dog attacks. And a message about Good Samaritans. Well, I had a very bad fall on Main Street in Tullamore last Saturday evening, and a couple helped me up, picked my shopping up off the street, and assisted me to my car. So if they are listening, I just wanted to say a huge thank you for your great, great kindness. Now, that is fantastic to hear. Acts of kindness, they cost nothing. In half an hour, your chances of surviving cancer are thankfully much greater than 10 years ago. The full figures coming up after the news at 10. Now, you may recall earlier this year, planning permission was granted for a substantial extension to Portlaoise Hospital. But getting planning permission is one thing, securing the funding is another. Sean Fleming is the local Fianna Fáil TD. He's also Junior Minister at the Department of Finance. Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
What update can you give us?
There's really great news for Portlaoise Hospital this morning. The HSE board had a meeting last Friday and gave the go-ahead for the immediate commencement of the works in Portlaoise Hospital. It's a 14 million euro contract. It's the biggest single investment in Portlaoise Hospital in my lifetime, and it will secure the future of the hospital for decades to come. So over the last 12 months, the planning was granted last January, has been in the tender stage. Because of the scale of the investment, it took a little bit longer to get approval because obviously with inflation, prices have been going up. But the board of the HSE last Friday gave the go-ahead for the work to immediately commence, which is the new respiratory assessment unit, an extension to the paediatric unit, additional accommodation, and obviously links and new links to the existing hospital is located close to the A&E department, and obviously other works that will have to be carried out in the hospital. The important thing is that some preliminary work was already done in preparation for this ultimately going ahead by a contractor. It so happens that contractor is still on site, and that means that contractor can start now immediately. And that's the really good news. So this is an immediate project. It's not funding to be approved for a project next year or the following year. The contract is approved. The contractor happens to be on site separately. I was in there yesterday. I've seen his signs and logos around the hospital. I have had no contact with the contractor, but I will say he's ready to go, and that's my knowledge from the HSC. I want to take the opportunity to thank the management in Portlaoise Hospital and the Midland region especially, because we had local managers who really, really pushed this. And it's very important that we have key people, you know, in the area making these decisions rather than them being made in Dublin. So this is really a big investment for Portlaoise, and I think it'll secure the hospital for decades to come.
Okay, to explain a couple of the terms you've used, a respiratory assessment unit, that's used to treat people with emphysema, with asthma, lung fibrosis, conditions such as that. A paediatric unit, well, that's an extension of the existing one. How does that negate the previous argument made by the HSE to downgrade the emergency department on the basis that it was unfit for purpose and wasn't seeing enough complex cases?
Yeah, and the emergency department, I just want to put on record, I have this information from the HSE in the last week, and the emergency department in Portlaoise, as we speak, is busier than and has more admission and people coming into it than the emergency department in Naas, Kilkenny, Tullamore or Mullingar. So the population of Laois has been increasing enormously in the last decade or so. It is now the biggest A&E, busiest A&E unit in respect of all neighbouring counties. So that report was produced 6 or 7 years ago on the basis of some people felt we needed very few A&E departments and people should travel to Dublin for everything. I think that concept is long gone. I do want to say that report that was drafted years ago, and I've confirmed this with the Minister, has never ever been presented to the Minister Donnelly in the last 2 years. It has never crossed his desk. So that is not on the Minister's desk at all for consideration. He's never seen the report. Nobody has ever presented to him. I think with COVID, people realise you need hospital services at a much closer level. And I'm not shouting for something just for Portlaoise solely because of Portlaoise. I'm saying the future of Portlaoise Hospital, including the A&E, has to be is guaranteed, because it is the biggest A&E unit in all the counties I've just mentioned, and that's the HSE information I've received in the last week or so.
Now, HICWA at the time, and even as recently as 2016, said the intensive care unit was unfit for purpose by virtue of its size. So while I know, obviously, there's building work taking place and there's an extension of paediatrics and a respiratory assessment unit, is there going to be any element of addressing those concerns that were previously raised?
In fact, any of us who are familiar with going in and out of Portlaoise know the A&E unit is actually totally relocated in the hospital the last 4 or 5 years ago. I don't remember how many. I remember going in to the old A&E years ago. It's a new entrance, a new location, there's new waiting rooms. There's much bigger facilities than there was when that report was printed about 6 or 7 years ago. Enhancement works have been done in the A&E, and this work will actually link in with the H&E, or with the A&E as well. And we mentioned the respiratory. I just know a lot of people, when I hear it locally, who are in hospital, there are a lot of older people who have breathing difficulties, lung issues, asthma. There seems to be a lot of it in the region, and that's why we have this respiratory assessment unit, because a lot of people who go into Portlaoise go in for medical reasons like that rather than major surgery. We all know in Portlaoise most people who require major surgery go to St. James. That's the way it is, and I think people are happy with that arrangement for major surgery to be in St. James's. And everyone in Laois will know somebody connected with them who's been in St. James's, one or the other. But for all the medical services and the respiratory services and the paediatric, the children's ward, and remember, it is the only maternity ward, you know, in some of the counties I've just mentioned as well. We don't have a maternity ward. I think certainly in Tipperary or in Offaly, and I'm not sure about the Kildare situation as well. So, you know, it is an extremely busy hospital, and this will copper fasten the absolute future of the hospital for decades.
Hmm. No, there are no maternity services in Kildare, no maternity ward at least. It's either go to Dublin or go to Portlaoise. The timetable then, Minister. So planning permission already granted certainly helps. Having the funding in place is the final catalyst. How long should it take to build?
Oh, well, all of these contracts would be 18 months, you know, and work will start. And I do want to say the preliminary works that were done already this year under a separate contract did cause disruption in the hospital, in the A&E, because this new building will link into the A&E department. And it has caused some disruption. And I do want to thank the staff who rightly were discommoded over the recent months. And they were happy to do so on the anticipation that the major job would be coming immediately down the road. And that's now cleared by the HSE board last Friday. So the contractor is on site. The funding is in place. The tender has been approved by the board. I've spoken to the senior minister on it. Everything is absolutely cleared. And as soon as the contractor is ready to move, this job will be underway straight away.
Minister Sean Fleming, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
0818 300 103 is the Midlands 103 comment line. Now, still to discuss today, the deposit return scheme is being rolled out over the next 12 months, February 2024 being the official target. Now, by the way, in case you're thinking, ooh, deposit, am I getting interest on my account? No, it's not that kind of deposit. Still to come today, Westmeath County Council is spending €100 million on services next year, including an extra 5% on roads. I imagine you'll have ideas on exactly where that money should be used. Full details from 20 past 11. Now, are you ready for some big numbers? Try to picture 3 billion plastic bottles. 3 billion of them, because that's how many we use in Ireland each year. And here's the kicker. Around a third of them are never collected for recycling. Back to the future now, as we discuss the new deposit return scheme. Colin O'Byrne is project manager for Return for Change. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning, Will. Thank you, Ethan.
Many listeners of a certain vintage will recall collecting the glass bottles once upon a time and getting money for them. What's in the future?
Well, the future, excuse me, is based on exactly the same premise. People used to bring the glass bottles back for a bit of money, and the reason that the shops or the producers were looking for the bottles was because it made sense to get them bottles back rather than start from fresh. So we're bringing, as you said, we're going back to the future. And what we're doing is a couple of reasons, really. One, you've already alluded to the incredible amount of plastic bottles that we go through each year in this country. And another one is the single-use plastic directive that the EU has put forward, which says that we have to have a 90% collection rate for plastic bottles by the end of this decade. And the only mechanism that we can really effectively say does that is a deposit return scheme, such as what we're affecting now.
Why do you think more bottles aren't recycled, given that it's free to do so, and that's already an incentive in its own right?
That's a really tough question to give you a good answer to. I don't know. A lot of stuff gets thrown around. So if people are out walking around in town or villages or whatever, there's not any recycling bins there, for example. So they're just going to put their plastic bottles, if they choose to use the bin, they're going to put the plastic bottles in a general waste bin, and that will head off to the incinerator. Other people would just throw them on the ground and don't give a fiddler's. So they'd be two of the main reasons why you wouldn't see those ending up in the recycling. And actually, speaking with someone who works in the waste industry, they told me that the assessment of only a third not being collected for recycling is quite generous. They'd say it's a lot more. Again, don't end up in recycling. So whatever way the numbers shake out, it's a big number that is of a good resource that's being lost for no good reason whatsoever.
So hence the carrot. How big will the carrot be?
Right. Well, the carrot, there's two carrots now that you mention it. So how it's going to work is plastic bottles, cans, 150 millilitres up to 500 millilitres, 150 millilitres up to half a litre, 15 cent will be the deposit. From the half a litre up to, I think, 3 litre is the biggest plastic bottle on the market, you're looking at 25 cent. So 15 cent and 25 cent for those two volumes, volume categories.
Now, if you're already recycling these at home in your bin, are you therefore missing out on the refund?
You will be. You'll be effectively be throwing money away. See, one of the things that the deposit return scheme does is that because of the way you're getting a separate collection, so that it's called bottle-to-bottle stream. So the plastic bottles will go to one side, the aluminium cans will go to the other, and they will not mix with anything else. Furthermore, the reverse vending machines, these big machines will be in the supermarkets, they won't allow the cans or bottles to have much beyond the tiniest drop of liquid in them. So you're getting really good quality materials for recycling. Now, if I use my green bin at home, I put it in, and there's loads of different materials in there, and the contamination rate is quite high, which means the quality of the materials for recycling doesn't end up being as good. Whereas the reverse vending machines and the used for the deposit return scheme, we can guarantee bottle-to-bottle food-grade quality materials that are much better quality, can be recycled for longer, and actually have a higher price when sold on the market for recyclable materials.
So the behaviour that this is designed to promote is that you might put a little box in the boot of your car, for instance, pop in the bottles as you go along, and then make your trip to the supermarket once a week as you do for your shopping, bring all of that in, put it in the vending machine, receive your refund, rather than put it in the recycle bin as some people have been accustomed to, and clearly not everybody has been. But that's the objective.
I think you're pretty much nailed on the head there, Will. So it's going to be compared, like, just second nature. You know, years ago, before the plastic bag tax, you'd get a load of the bags hoisted on you at the till. The plastic bag tax came in, all of a sudden, pretty much everyone has their own bags. And it's just second nature. We just bring our bags with us when we go to do our shop. It'll be the same thing. Like you said, it could be in the boot of the car, could be in the porch or somewhere else. You just collect yourself and bottles and cans, bring them with you when you go shopping, and that'll come off your shopping bill in the end. And it'll just be something we do.
Now, there are a few things this will depend on. One, as a few listeners have pointed out, is the vending machines being in good order, because they're frustrated already with bottle bangs not being emptied often enough. Could the same happen in the supermarkets?
I don't think so, because one of the things with these reverse vending machines, a really important component of them, is that they will compact these materials. Now, I've seen a couple of these machines in action. The front face of it is, you know, it's very pretty and slick and whatever else. But if you were to go and have a look at the back, they're really rather large, 15, 20 foot long kind of thing. They can be. So they will compact and crush those materials down. Therefore, that means there doesn't have to be as many journeys out to to collect, which cuts down on carbon emissions and fuel costs, energy costs associated with transport. Also, the machines will give a heads up saying, no, we're 3/4 away full. And I'm not sure, no, I know they can do this. I'm not sure that they will do this. But the messages can be sent from the machine to the scheme, the system operator, to tell them to come out and collect the materials. So, look, machines are, I can't tell you that no machine is ever going to be perfect, because they're not, right? But they are very good bits of equipment from what I've seen, really good. And there shouldn't be any problem. And in fact, most supermarkets will have a couple of them anyway. So if one happened to be on the blink, then there'll be another one. But as far as I know, there'll be engineers in every county to keep an eye on these machines as well. It's all very, you know, technical stuff.
And will they dispense coppers and coins, or will there be some electronic means of collecting the money?
Now, here is what I don't exactly know. So according to their own website, re-turn.ie, so that's the system, the scheme operator, Re-Turn. So they're telling us that you can receive your refund against your purchase, so that'll, you know, come off your shopping bill, essentially, in cash, or you can pick, you give it to a charity. Such, you know, Tesco and the likes do that. You know, they give you little vouchers and you can pick one of the local charities to give some donation. So there'll be something like that. There'll also be a mechanism whereby local community groups, I think schools as well, GA clubs, scouts, this kind of thing, can register as charitable collection points. So you could just give your cans and bottles to them, and then they could use them to, you know, get a bit of cash in and help do whatever they're doing within their organisation. So, yes, according to the website, it'll be cash. It'll be off your receipts. They may well have some kind of app as well, a credit. I don't know. I think that can be done, whether they do it or not. They have a lot of time to play with in that regard.
A few people who are involved in tidy towns and voluntary pickups are wondering, can they bring rubbish that has been discarded and collect the money off it?
No, not now. So there's going to be a line drawn in the sand, sort of BD and AD, before deposit return and after deposit return. At some point, quite possibly, will accord to themselves, February 24, they'll say, right, every bottle from this point now, you'll pay a deposit on, and that's where you can get the deposit back from. So any bottles and cans they find hanging around now, I'm afraid that won't do. However, just because you mentioned specifically the tidy towns, so many of their volunteer hours go into litter picks, and they do a fantastic job, the length and breadth of the country. But can you imagine that, like, so many of the volume, if they sort of did a waste characterization study, it could be 50 or 60% of what they pick up can be bottles and cans. So all of a sudden, if you take them bottles and cans, which will be empty bottles and cans, which will be effectively money out from there, they'll have so many more volunteer hours to do something else. Like, they could be doing local planting or work with men's sheds or whatever it is that they, you know, to choose to focus their energies. And they can also register as a charitable collection point and collect, but people can bring them their empty bottles and cans, and then they can use that to fund their operations.
So once we get to February 24, presumably then there's going to be a 15-cent increase in the price of a bottle of Coke, for instance, if it's the smaller bottle, and a larger increase on the bigger bottles.
Well, it shouldn't be an increase on the sale price of the product. That should be whatever it is. And the deposit is just set then on top, and then you get that back once you bring your empty back. So it shouldn't affect the sale price of the products.
But who is giving you the deposit back?
Right. It's a complicated, slightly complicated system. So the deposit return scheme, basically, it's an extended producer responsibility scheme, like the WEEE scheme, you know, that when we bring back our electrical goods. So the producers are footing the cost of this scheme. The onus is on them to come up with a scheme that that works efficiently so that they don't incur much in the way of losses. There's no cost to the exchequer, to the state. The producers bear all the costs for this, right? So effectively, they're going to pay for the scheme to operate. They're going to pay, I'm not sure exactly what it's going to be yet, a certain amount per can or bottle introduced into the market. And then when they get them back at the end, they can sell those materials on the market for recycling and put the money back into the scheme to keep it running. The best schemes in Europe are usually Norway and Germany, right? So Norway in a good year might have a 94% collection rate of its bottles and cans, which is fantastic. But that still means there's 6% there of deposits that haven't been redeemed. So those deposits, they don't go into the pockets of the producers, they go back into the scheme to keep it funded like that.
Mm. And we're assuming they'll pass no cost on to the end user?
No. You can see the regulations there on the department's website. So the costs must be borne by the producers. And there's a review mechanism to check in every couple of years to see how things are working, can be working better and all this.
Very good. Colin, very comprehensive. Appreciate your time. Thank you for the call.
Well, thank you very much for the call. And I'm delighted to talk about it. It's great that it's finally here. Actually, do you know, we did have a deposit return scheme in Ireland in 1799.
Oh, really?
Thwaites. Excuse me, if I haven't said it. Thwaites. Some of you hold on.
Thwaites.
Yeah, you're right. Thwaites. So, in 1799, they instigated a kind of a deposit return scheme whereby if you brought a dozen glass bottles back, you'd get, whatever the currency was, say, twopence at the time. And again, purely for the reason, wasn't because they were environmentalists or anything like that. It just made sense. It was common sense. Bring that stuff back, use it again, we'll get rid of it. And so that was 1799. So
the more things change, the more they stay the same.
There you go. Well, there you go.
Take care, Colin. Cheers.
All the best. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Regarding the elderly couple shouted at by a mum with teenage children for parking in a child bay at Dunstores, this is causing a little division. Hilda says, I thought those bays were for people with small children who need assistance or need to be placed in a buggy. Hence, there's room between the cars to manoeuvre. So technically, neither car should have been parked there. Also, can we call out SUV drivers who cannot manage to get their oversized car into a normal-sized parking space and use the disabled parking instead? Not impressed is Hilda. Next listener says, my understanding of parent-toddler parking is that a toddler was maybe in a baby seat. So the lady and her husband shouldn't have been in the parking slot, but then again, age considered. The other lady with the Jeep and the teenage children, she shouldn't have been there either, especially speaking in that manner to an elderly lady. Rule of thumb, speak softly but clearly when making a point in public. That's from Brenda. And one more. Well, unfortunately for the caller, she was in the wrong. She parked in the wrong spot. Whether you are 70 or 17, you should abide by the rules. Some older people would park up the aisle of the church on a Sunday if they could get away with it.
Sometimes the sun goes round the moon. I see the passion in your eyes. Sometimes
Vanessa Williams and Save the Best for Last. It's Tuesday morning on Midlands 103. Still to come today, the €100 million budget for Westmeath County Council in 2023. Never has so much money been spent on services. But will they be the right services? You can decide. Also, should we ban cars from town centres? If you disagree, you're probably over 24 years of age. But I'll tell you what younger listeners have to say a little bit later. Next, Arthur O'Mara goes out in the garden and finds some berries. Arthur O'Mara is all festive in red. How are you doing?
Oh, yeah, top of the morning. How are you going?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
And you've brought berries, which are equally festive.
Yeah, time of the year for a bit of colour, for the patio. A lot of people doing pots and planters for their loved ones who are no longer with us. So berries are great, a bit of colour, brighten up a grave.
Now, what's unusual here? You tend to think of red berries, especially at this time of year.
Yes, no, they come in all sorts of shapes and sizes.
You've a pink berry, a purple berry, white berries.
White berries, yeah, there's all the colours. Yellow berries you can get, and loads of them. And the birds don't tend to eat them. Now, they'll eat mountain ash, you know, the trees you grow in your garden, and they'll eat Cotoni Asta berries, most of them early in the season or around Christmas time. But the berries on Skimmia and Pernettia and on the Calicarpa. The Calicarpa is most unusual. It has an unusual name.
This one?
This one, yeah.
Okay, now these are very, very small lilac berries.
Yeah, but in clusters up along the stems. Lovely, lovely shrub. Grows to about 4 feet high in the garden. So you can, but you can also use it in a container. You know, and you can do a nice combination. And you've got the Christmas rose there, the white hellebore and cyclamen. So there's loads of hardy plants that you can use this time of the year to get a bit of colour around the front door. This time of the year where everybody kind of... I was blowing leaves the other day, collecting... All the leaves come down, right? And if you have trees, which I do have,
I love trees. I've beech hedging.
Beech hedging, yeah. But a blower. I mean, if you want the perfect Christmas present for somebody, then what am I going to get the person who has everything? A leaf blower. They're fantastic. Just get a good one.
No,
you don't like leaf
I tell
blower.
You, the problem is a good shower of rain. The leaves are all soggy. They just lie there.
No, the leaf blower will blow them. Just get a good leaf blower. Go down to Mitchell's here in Tullamore and get a good leaf blower, right?
And blow them to where?
And blow them into a pile or blow them under the hedge, but blow them off the lawn because they destroy the grass. And they look around the edges of the lawn, it looks as if there's no one living here. So, and raking them is tedious. Mm. And if they're wet, that's where you're going wrong. Raking wet leaves is kind of something you'd be put out if you were a convict.
I was about to say, it's Guantanamo
yeah.
Bay
no,
stuff.
Guantanamo
yeah.
Bay, no, a leaf blower chief. Things have moved on, you know. The internet.
How did we get onto that? We were talking about berries.
I don't know how we got onto that, but the garden this time of the year, kind of everybody kind of retreats out of the garden a little bit more indoors, and the days are shorter. But it's nice to see a cheery pot at the door. So make up a pot with a couple of shrubs that you can plant out in the garden at a later stage, so you're not throwing them away. And now is the time to do it. And you can still plant tulips and daffodils. All those guys will still grow perfect for spring.
Question on berries.
Yes.
How long will they last?
On which berries?
Yeah, take this. I mean, it looks stunning now. But if you buy something with a purple flower, well, the flower will probably last longer and maybe even recur.
As you know, the berries usually last longer than flower.
Really?
Yeah, they last for months and months and months. Like the skimmia there, they will have those berries next year. But they will be down in the middle of the plant and next year's growth will have kind of have covered them.
Hmm.
The Pernettia is probably be okay until about spring, early spring, late winter, early spring. The same with Calicarpa, the birds will eventually eat them.
So you've got what's this boy? Sorry, I'm just after noticing.
That's a cyclamen.
Very nice. Now, red leaf.
Cyclamen.
Or red flower,
red flower. You can get them in red and you can get them in white, you can get them in pink, and you can get them red and white. They're very Christmassy. But there's a secret and a lot of people who are big gardeners out there saying, oh, cyclamens, every time I plant those, they die. And the secret with cyclamens is not to put them, they don't like being too wet. So normally you plant your plants into containers and you use compost, which tends to hold the moisture.
Mm.
And then if you plant the cyclamens into that and they get all the rain, they flop and they last all of about 2 weeks. The secret in planting them is either only barely put them, take them out of the pot that they're in. They come in a small pot, like size of a coffee cup. Take them out of that and you just only put them down the depth of your nail into the compost. And if you say, oh, I don't like the look of them or I don't want to do that, take them out of the pot that they come in, cut the bottom off of the pot. A customer told me this recently, that she does it and it works 100%. She had cyclamens in flower in May, planted at Christmas, by take them out of the pot they come in, they're in a plastic pot, cut the bottom of the pot off without cutting your fingers off, put them back into the pot and then plant them as normal. And that keeps them dry so they don't get too wet, so they don't flop. That's
excellent.
For the cyclamens.
This one in particular I like because it's
lovely colour.
Cyclamen persicum mini.
Yes.
But the leaf has white patches, which gives the illusion that this has been out on a frosty morning.
On a frosty morning, which we're going to get shortly.
Very much so.
Yes. Now,
and if you compare it, I've spotted something else in this basket here. If you pair it perhaps with silver mix.
You're getting good at this now. Here, Mr. Greenfingers.
Now, silver mix, as the name suggests,
yes,
again, looks as if it has been out on that frosty night.
Yes. We're trying to do a winter pot here, Chief, right?
Mm. Well, yes, but the berries are bringing colour to an otherwise colourless season.
Yes.
Whereas this is playing into the season.
The season that's in it. Mm. And you can always use the winter headers now are really hardy. I didn't bring one in because I didn't have enough room on your desk for everything. But the winter headers, don't pass them because they'll flower from now to April. From Christmas to April, in flower, and will come back every year. That's the winter flowering headers, and they come in all sorts of colours, whites, pinks, light reds, and they're fantastic in the garden or in a container.
Now, you who
one
likes
of my
your
favorites.
Your Latin names.
Helleborus. Helleborus,
but I love the English variety of this, Christmas Carol.
Christmas Carol, yes. It's Helleborus usually, they're a winter, early spring flowering plant. And Christmas Carol is a select variety that has been bred to flower around Christmas, to flower early for pots and window boxes. It's white. It's a lovely colour. It's not a rose at all, but it's called Christmas Rose. I don't know why. But they're a big white flower and lots of them. And they will flower all through the winter. Perfect in pots. And in the garden, and especially in the shade of, you know, if you have a shady spot in the garden, under trees or at the edge of trees, helleborus just love that.
So that's the inspiration, the ideas bit out of the way. Let's
tackle
some questions. And Arthur is here until 11. The first caller wonders if you have ever heard of soursop and how it could be sourced. Soursop.
I have a book that I got a long, long time ago, and it has all those kind of names, you know, the old the old names and the English names, and it gives you the Latin name. Unfortunately, I was trained just to learn the Latin names, and I don't know all the common names. But are you doing Mr. Google there?
I'm doing Mr. Google.
And give me a Latin name, and then I may be able to tell you what it is.
It is the fruit of Annona muricata.
A what?
There, I hand you the phone. It's easier if I just hand it to him.
This 2 seconds of silence was brought to you by me. What is it?
It's a mystery.
Also called graviola, blah, 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 whatever you have.
Yeah, South American, so it's Spanish.
South American. You would have to send me off to South America for a fortnight and I'll source it for you.
So
all expenses paid, 5-star.
The question was phrased, has Arthur ever heard of it? No, is the answer to the question.
The number of plants the other end of the world, or even this side of the world, that I haven't heard of.
Now, next query. Can you please ask Arthur, since our roses still have flower, Can we prune or should we leave well enough alone?
I'm looking out the window at home at roses, Dublin Bay and Princess Anne that are still in flower, and I'm going to leave them and see can I have roses in flower at Christmas, and then I'll prune them after Christmas.
I'm laughing at a text from Breda. Arthur, where do we blow the leaves? As the neighbours have enough of their own.
Well, no.
So don't blow them next door then.
Don't blame me. Well, if you'd brought them into a pile and collect them and put them into the compost heap. You know, or maybe ask your neighbours, would they like some of yours?
There was a fantastic contraption at the National Ploughing Championships. And I think it was a firm from your home county of Tipperary that was producing it.
Of course, yes.
Or maybe it was Cork. Could have been Cork either. Not so good. But anyway, it was an anaerobic digester for your kitchen. So you would put in all of your food waste.
Right.
But you could put in your garden waste as well.
As well, yeah.
And then it would break it down. I'm sure there was an activating agent that went in and it would break it down and emit gas. And then you could harness that gas to power your cooker. It was a fantastic idea.
Yes.
I'm not sure how well it worked in execution. I'm sure people have bought the product and can review it.
My uncle, a long, long time ago, had his an anaerobic digester 30 years ago, producing electricity from pig muck.
Really?
Yes. Long, long time ago. He was kind of into all that kind of stuff.
A very far-sighted man.
Very far-sighted man, yes.
Next caller has received a strawberry plant, not edible, from a friend. This was in the spring they received it, and they say usually it should produce fabulous flowers, but mine hasn't come on at all. In fact, it looks like it's dead. Should it be in bloom by now?
It's the strawberry tree, Arbutus unido. Beautiful, beautiful tree. It's a native to Killarney, a native of Ireland. It does like peaty ground, and it's evergreen, and a little bit of shelter. It doesn't really flower. It flowers in a kind of late summer, early autumn with a lovely white bell-shaped flower. Really white. Pearl white. And then followed by strawberry-like fruits that are not edible. Lovely, lovely plant. When the person says, is it alive or dead, it's hard to know. But the leaves should be green. If the leaves are black, it's suffering. But it may not be dead, because if it's in the wrong place or if it dried out or whatever, it may have got a shock. I would plant it in a reasonably sheltered spot, in a bit of lime-free compost, and leave it alone. And it can, if it's a small plant, they won't really flower until they're a decent size. So I'd say time.
Don't give up yet, in other words.
No.
Arthur O'Mara is here until 11. A couple of questions on lawn care next. Patricia in Kilbeggan says her daughter has used soursop with her because she's recovering from cancer. I hope that goes well, Patricia. Soursop apparently has many traditional medical uses. It's high in vitamins and antioxidants, and that's as much as we know. And no, before you ask again, Arthur, we will not be sending you to South America on a research trip.
Are you sure?
Definitely.
I'm free now after Christmas, January, when I love being South America after Christmas.
Good, start walking.
But on a serious note, it's one of the reasons, you know, people say, oh, global warming and it's whatever and plants are disappeared and big deal. It's the medicine properties in plants that we don't even know yet, that the cures, because a lot of cures originated in plants and our plants extracts. So it's important that we mind our trees and shrubs and plants.
Hear, hear. Next query. My roses are old, says Breda, but they still have a mountain of roses every year, and the stems near the root have moss growing all over them. Is there a spray I can use to get rid of it?
Yes, old roses still flowering 100%. Perfect. Hold on to them. Prune them as normal and feed them in spring. Maybe give them a little bit of firm manure if you want to give them a treat the middle of January, and spray them with winter wash. And you must spray them when they're completely dormant, kind of middle of January, no later, because roses, especially with the climate we have at the moment, roses are still growing, so I wouldn't spray them now. And they'll start to bud again in early February, so you have a short window. because you don't want to burn the buds, spray them with winter wash, middle of January, and that will get rid of that moss.
Next, from Joe, who wonders if now is a good time to put agricultural lime on his lawn. Why would he do it?
Oh, lime is the key to soil fertility. Joe is on to the properties that make grass grow well. With the wet weather we've had for the last couple of months, and very mild, moss is just crazy on lawns. Normally, I'm sure you can put it on now. It won't do any harm to put it on now because it's a long-term process building up to pH in the soil, which is very important as a deterrent for moss. Normally, we would do it in early spring, kind of the end of January, but I'm sure you could do it now if you wanted to. Continue cutting the lawn. A lot of people try and put away the lawnmower the end of October, but the grass is still growing.
Well, that's because it's so mild, or has been until now, anyway.
It's 12 degrees, you know. So continue cutting the lawn, remove the leaves, and you can put on the lime, but I would be inclined to wait until after Christmas.
You, who has one of those automowers, do you leave it out all seasons?
Oh, it's still working, yeah. And now normally I'd put them putting away the automatic mowers now because the grass would have stopped and there's no point in wasting electricity. But I had to put them...
back to work?
Leave them going, yeah. Now, they're probably not going as often as they, you know, as would in the summertime. But the grass is still on the move.
Lucas, winter wash on fruit bushes and for a tree. Which wash is best?
There's a whole load of them on the market.
And when would you do it?
In the dead of winter, when the plants are totally dormant, after Christmas.
All right, next query. Liam in Portlaoise is looking for an orchid. Sorry, he has an orchid that has started to die off. And he's wondering how to recover it.
Yeah, now, there's a whole lot of orchids. There's a whole lot of different families. There's Cymbidium orchids, and there's a whole load of different varieties of them. And they all have a slightly different care. But the normal ones you would buy in a garden centre are the Cymbidium ones. And they flower in the wintertime. They will be in flower now. This is their season. September, October, November, December, January, February time. That's when they flower. And then you give them a rest period in the summer. So if it's dying off now, that doesn't sound good. You might want to ring me off air. And if you ring the garden centre, and I have an orchid specialist called Anya, you won't get her today because she's off. But if you ring the garden centre in Gaybrook, on Wednesday onwards, Anya would be the best person to give you advice on your orchid, depending on the variety and so forth.
And you gave her a day off?
We do give her a day off every now and again.
How did she get planning permission for that?
Just about now. She's been on the phone to me, even this morning, 8 o'clock.
Arthur, thanks very much.
Okay.
We'll see him again in 2 weeks' time. Or you can find him at O'Mara's Garden Pavilion in Gaybrook. Still to talk about today, €100 million to be spent on council services in Westmeath, including 5% extra for roads. Where would you put that money to good work? And where would you hide a winning lotto ticket until you could claim the cash? It'd be a lovely dilemma to have, wouldn't it? But let's just say Saturday night you get the good news, the National Lottery offices aren't open and you've to take care of this precious piece of paper. Where shall you fortify it? More on that a little bit later. A report from the ESRI shows the majority of 16 to 24-year-olds would like to ban internal flights within the country and to introduce car-free zones in towns and cities. More than 9 out of 10 people surveyed in that age bracket are concerned about climate change. And other issues they were in favour of include fining businesses that exceed emissions standards and mandating renewable energy, even if it is more expensive. And that is before we discuss eating habits. Midlands 103's Chloe Farrell has been speaking with Professor Pete Lunn, who is head of the Behavioural Research Unit within the ESRI, and he has been telling her about the findings.
What we found is that young people are much more supportive of more radical policies that would involve things like higher taxes and bans and so on. So they want to see cars out of city centres, they want to see fewer flights, they want to see less eating of meat. Many would support more taxes on meat if that would reduce consumption. Many want to eat less meat into the future. So what we find is that this group of 16 to 24-year-olds, they are more radical than older adults in what they would like to see in terms of climate action. We find high levels of worry among older people. So even among older adults, we find more than 70% of the population is worried about climate change. But what the younger people are seemingly happy to see is more radical action. They want to see more penalties on businesses. They want to see less flying. They want to see less eating of meat. They want to see more public transport. They want to see fewer people taking cars. They want to see more active travel and so on. So what we really find is the differences in the strength of feeling and what they would be willing to see in terms of changes to lifestyles and changes to policy. Young people are saying that they are happy to eat less meat. They're happy to fly less, most of them. Now, you know, we obviously have to qualify this a bit. This is what they're saying their intention is. It's not necessarily what they're doing now. I mean, a little less than 10% of them, for example, are vegetarians and eating no meat at the moment. But many are signaling a desire to eat less meat and to go towards a plant-based diet in future. I think the other thing that's important about this report, though, is that we had a test of young people's knowledge of which actions are most beneficial in terms of lowering emissions. And what we found there was that most young people actually really don't know what the most powerful actions they can take are. So, for example, although many recycle, the large majority recycle, they might think that has a bigger impact on emissions as things like flying less and eating less meat, which it doesn't. So what we find actually is that knowledge isn't great, but desire is.
And is there something that this report will achieve then?
Well, our aim with this report is to get more evidence into the public domain. I mean, climate change is demanding of politicians that they act and that they act in a more radical way and in a faster way to generate change than they normally would have to. So I think our report is helpful from the point of view of showing that young people in particular would like to see more of that radical action. Now, you know, that's not us calling for that. We can just see that in order to hit our climate change targets, in order to hit our emissions targets, it is going to take more radical action, it's going to take change. So I think what our report shows today is that younger members of our society are certainly up for a higher level of change, a faster change.
Would you agree with that? And by the way, on the subject of cars and car-free zones, it's anything but a car-free zone near Ganley's in Athlone, that roundabout experiencing quite significant delays at the moment. So plan accordingly if you're in the area. Let's tease out the findings a little more with Evelyn Fitzpatrick. She runs the refill mill in Mullingar. Evelyn, good morning.
Good morning, Will. How are you?
Very well, thank you. This would suggest that your most loyal and most active customers should be between 16 and 24, but does that necessarily translate?
I would say no, actually, it doesn't translate, which was very, very surprising for me when I opened first. I assumed it would be a lot of the younger generation taking action and shopping with me. But it's more kind of 30 plus, I suppose, coming into the shop on a regular basis. But what I think it is, that age group have their own homes, whereas the younger generation, they're more likely to buy kind of soaps rather than a food shop with me. So they try, but the conversation, they're very passionate when they're coming in and we have really fantastic conversations about it, but I hear a lot about eco-anxiety, and I think that a lot of it is they're so overwhelmed they don't even know where to begin, so we have to tackle that quite a lot here in the shop.
But also, I suppose, the agenda items for 16 to 24-year-olds today will be different than, let's say, when I was 16 to 24. I remember being in school and we had trips to Enfo in Dublin and they were talking about CFCs and deodorant cans and the threat to the ozone layer. And it was a different set of concerns back then which required a different set of actions. So is there a generational element to this?
I think absolutely. And it's exciting to see that the young people really are becoming more active in terms of wanting to push this change. Because, like you said, you were talking about it in school. I was talking about it in school about, you know, 15 years ago. It's the same conversation about reducing our carbon emissions and being a lot more eco-friendly. But now I think the time, we have to change it now. So it's great to see the young people are pushing for it, but I hope something comes of it.
But then the economics of it will demand some realism. So if, for instance, there was a car-free zone around the centre of Mullingar, and I know traffic is a sensitive issue in Mullingar.
It is.
But would you necessarily be able to stay in business in Austin Friar Street if people had to walk there and maybe park out beyond the Dublin Bridge?
You know, I think I would. I really do, because the traffic in Mullingar is something that it's crazy. But it's in most towns, traffic is crazy. And if we had viable options, cycle lanes or even maybe bus transfers within the town, it would make such a huge difference. Rather than having everybody having to jump into their car to go from one end of the town to the other. And after we had the FLA here this year, so many people were talking about that, how pedestrianising certain areas would be really beneficial. And
so it could actually have the opposite effect. It could make it more accessible, more attractive, and business could go up.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Because people driving by in their car aren't really what good for my business. It's people that are walking past and looking in the shop windows and coming in and having conversations. And I think it really would, if you look at it from a different point of view, people want the options, and it is very scary to change, and I know that, and it does cost a lot of money to change, but the fact of the matter is we need it, so we should do it in a positive way and in a realistic way.
One thing I notice about many of the findings is they're quite polarising. So 48% who currently eat meat intend to eat less. So that's half. That suggests, again, there's a binary other half who want to continue eating meat as normal. Likewise, 43% favour more green taxes. So you know, you've got a slightly larger majority on the other side who would oppose green taxes. The danger here is it could become quite a divisive debate.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think most people think that they have the right solution. But a lot of this is going to have to be compromised. And a lot of it is kind of figuring out what works for certain areas. I mean, what works for Mullingar Town won't be what works for Dublin City. Do you know? So there is, communities do need to be involved in this decision making. But it's such an urgent matter that something needs to be done. If we just start, you know, at the minute it's still a lot of talk, whereas action needs to happen.
Well, it remains to be seen how politicians would respond if they were all surveyed. I'd be curious to see what the findings and the answers to the questions would be. Bearing in mind, of course, you've got two Green Party members of Westmeath County Council, whereas there are other parts of the Midlands that don't have any green representation at all. And it will be ultimately in the political sphere that many of these changes have to be enacted. Evelyn, grateful for your time and thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Will. Bye.
Evelyn Fitzpatrick runs the Refill Mill in Mullingar on Austin Friar Street. So which camp do you find yourself in? Are you in favour of car-free zones in your local town? Would you also favour eating less red meat into the future? And if you're, again, a farmer or indeed in a farmer's organisation, well, that presents a challenge too, because you need to get your messaging right if people are seriously considering moving away from red meat to plant-based products. That's your livelihood at stake. So fascinating research from the ESRI. More details on Midlands103.com. Indeed, it's all over the morning papers as well. Next, speaking of Westmeath County Council, €100 million to be spent on services next year, which is up 11% on 2022. Where is the extra cash to be put to best effect? Many comments, presumably from people who are not aged between 16 and 24. Will, the little darlings want to be driven to their nightclub and to their pub to spend their stupid parents' money. maybe the little dears can also be seen cycling to college and then to the pub after that and eating their nut roast and organic lettuce leaves. And, well, you get the gist from that text. Thank you. Say how you really feel. Well, I think the survey shows young people are very opinionated but don't understand or do anything to action what they are saying. And John in Saudi Arabia says, the survey is utter rubbish. We used to walk to school. We didn't have instant online shopping. We didn't have mobile phones to be updated every year. Utter rubbish in this survey. And he also points you to a monologue by the journalist Alan Jones on Australian TV. I can't play it all, but you'll get a flavour of it from this.
To all the school kids going on strike for climate change, you're the first generation who've required air conditioning in every classroom. You want TV in every room, and your classes are all computerised. You spend all day and night on electronic devices. More than ever, you don't walk or ride bikes to school, but you arrive in caravans of private cars that choke suburban roads and worsen rush hour traffic. You're the biggest consumers of manufactured goods ever, and update perfectly good, expensive luxury items to stay trendy. Your entertainment comes from electric devices. Furthermore, the people driving your protests are the same people who insist on artificially inflating the population growth through immigration, which increases the need for energy, manufacturing and transport. The more people we have, the more forest and bushland we clear, the more of the environment that's destroyed. How about this? Tell your teachers to switch off the aircon. Walk or ride to school. Switch off your devices and read a book. Make a sandwich instead of buying manufactured fast food. No.
So that's just a sample of what Alan Jones has to say, whether you agree or disagree. Now, one more. Regarding the child who was attacked by a dog, Tommy would like us to do an entire programme on the type of dogs that should be and must be muzzled and placed on a lead, and also to include the penalties for it. We'll actually be covering that in around half an hour. And as for the lead, all dogs in public are supposed to be on a lead, and there are certain breeds that are supposed to wear a muzzle. We shall clarify everything very soon. Now, in our coverage of what your local council will be doing next year with its budget, our final roundup brings us to County Westmeath, where the 100.6 million euro budget has been approved, which is an 11% increase on the amount spent for 2022. And among the highlights, it includes an extra 5% for road maintenance, 16.5 million euro in total to be spent on the highways and byways of the county. The Cathaoirleach of Westmeath County Council is Aengus O'Rourke. Aengus, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
So we are in a time of inflation and many of the council's costs will have increased. So what were the pressures and what were the priorities when framing this?
Yeah, well, I suppose we received an autumn update some months ago from the Director of Finance, and it painted a pretty bleak picture because, I mean, much of it, you know, spoke of the uncertainty that faced us all from increase in energy in particular, but also just general inflation around the cost of delivering all the services that you can imagine a local authority would be responsible for. But I have to say, when we got to the budget in recent weeks, the picture wasn't that bleak because thankfully the government stepped up and provided some funding for local authorities, which helped us to bridge the gap to a large extent, particularly around the big increases that we've seen from energy. So that was very important. It was crucial, in fact, to delivering a balanced budget for 2023. So, yeah, you're right. Last year, this current year, 2022, we delivered a budget of 90.5 million. And for next year, it will be 100.6 million for the County of Westmeath.
So I'm just looking at some of the options that would have been on the table. The local property tax is remaining unchanged. You would have had the power to bring that downwards, which would have been politically popular. Why not do that?
Yeah, so I suppose there are two big decisions out of any budget process. One is whether or not to decrease or increase the local property tax that every homeowner faces each year. And the other one then is around commercial rates, Will, which obviously is the tax that businesses pay. In relation to the property tax, we chose not to touch it, and you know, the options there were to increase it, but we chose to leave it as it is. I know that many local authorities, in fact, increased it because they felt they might need to do that in terms of reaching a balanced budget and meeting the demands, if you like, on the budget for 2023. But we stuck our neck out to an extent and left it as it was. So the people now will be considering their LPT charge for 2023, and they'll find that it's the same as it was for last year. So I think that was a good deal for the people.
And then the executive said it would be €617,000 additional to the budget had you accepted that increase on the property tax. Did they propose to spend that in any particular or specific way?
Well, yeah, the executive, you're right. The executive, back in September when we took the decision around the LPT, they did suggest or make the recommendation that we would increase it, and we didn't agree with them. And look, there were some suggestions around how it might be spent, but we wanted to see the meat and bone of the budget, really, before we take such a decision. We thought that was a huge decision to take, to impose an additional tax on households when they've already been inflicted upon across so many levels, if you like, in terms of the household budget. Every single item within the household budget is seeing an increase in the past 6 to 12 months. So we didn't want to impose another burden on them. So we took the decision to leave the LPT as it was. And we also took the decision, Will, not to increase the commercial tax either on businesses, commercial rates. So again, that was a big decision to take. Now, in fairness to the executive of Westmeath County Council, they didn't suggest an increase. But it is noteworthy that Westmeath is one of the lowest pitched councils, in particularly in the Midlands region. All our neighbouring councils have a much higher valuation in terms of commercial rates. So, look, I think we have to make up a little bit of ground in future years, but certainly this wasn't the year to do that or to again impose any further increases on businesses. Times are tough enough.
Yes, I think many business owners might be nervous, though, at hearing the prospect of that is on the horizon. That said, homeowners should take note that in neighbouring counties there are local authorities charging the full rate of property tax. Is that something that you can say is permanently off the table in Westmeath?
Well, I couldn't give that guarantee. You know, this comes up for decision, as you know, every year. Each council is asked to make a decision around the local property tax. We've taken the decision for 2023, as I said, to leave it as it is. So look, you know, in terms of 2024, who knows? But I wouldn't be inclined to increase it if, you know, economic conditions will remain so uncertain. And that is the big thing, because here we are passing a budget at the end of November 2022 for the entirety of 2023. And yet, you know, globally and more locally, there's a huge amount of economic uncertainty out there. So, you know, there's always a caveat with a budget that you pass for the entirety of the year ahead. Who knows what might lie ahead? Who could have predicted, you know, the events of the past 3 years? So, look, we're moving forward in a positive way. The services that we are now planning for 23 will match those of 2022. People won't see any reduction in services or in activity around the county, which is great news. I was very pleased as chairman to pass this budget yesterday, and people should, I suppose, recognise that, as I say, services will be the same for next year as they were for this year.
Time and again, whenever we talk about council budgets, the issue of roads comes up, and listeners often ask, how is it targeted and who decides which roads should receive maintenance grants and works rather than others?
Yeah, look, there's a huge amount of work. People wouldn't, I suppose, even appreciate, and I wouldn't expect them to know the level of detail that goes into the decision-making around the improvements to roads, the resurfacing plans that we have. But our engineers literally on foot walk the roads, and that's what they do. So we put in place a three-year roads rehabilitation plan, and we agree to that on a three-year cycle. And it works on the basis of priority, Will. Simple as, the worst roads are taken care of first. We put a lot of money, as you said, 16.5 million is a big figure. And the roads programme that we have in place will see that money well spent. And it has to be said, on any analysis of our road network in Westmeath, compared to other counties in the country, Westmeath fares very, very well.
Angus O'Rourke, we will leave it there. Appreciate your time and thank you.
Thanks, Will.
Next on Midlands 103, if you got that call that you won the national lottery, how would you mind the ticket? Because one caller in Moneygall, one listener rather in Moneygall, I should say, came up with a rather ingenious solution to protect their €250,000. 225,000. €634. There's a lot you could do with that, and one person in County Offaly has the wonderful dilemma of deciding how to spend it. It's not you, Sinead Hubble.
No, unfortunately not.
It's not me either.
I wouldn't be sitting here looking at you if I just won that money.
So, it has been claimed.
It has. The winner was up at the National Lottery headquarters yesterday to collect that nice big fat cheque just in time for Christmas.
But they're remaining anonymous.
Yeah, they've decided that they don't want to tell anybody who they are. So, yeah, they're keeping everything under wraps.
So have you noticed somebody around Moneygall who's looking extra happy? But then again, they may not be in Moneygall because it was bought where exactly?
It was bought at the Obama Plaza in Moneygall.
Which has enormous passing trade.
But at least we know that they're from Offaly.
Yes, that is a bonus. How did they receive the news?
They were left shocked, surprised. They were very engrossed in the World Cup when the draw took place last Wednesday and they completely forgot to check their ticket. And it wasn't until they were in bed that night when they checked it online. And they were just in disbelief and shock when they discovered that they had won. They ended up checking the numbers four or five times just to make sure that they weren't had dreamt it before they actually told their partner that they had won almost €250,000.
It's actually from the partner that a person took better care of the ticket than they do their other half.
Yes, absolutely fantastic. Now, in fairness, it sounds like they did because they actually got the ticket, wrapped it in bubble wrap and hid it under the bed.
Taking no chances. No chances.
Keep it safe until they could get up to the national headquarters.
Well, it's worth €250,000. And if you, let's say you win on a weekend and you know it's going to be 24, 48 hours before the lottery office opens, do you let it out of your sight?
Terrifying. Like, it's only a slip of paper, so anything actually can happen. It. So, yeah, you have to be very, very careful with it.
So, what sort of tactics have people used on previous wins?
Well, people have used different ways of looking after their ticket. One New Zealand woman who won $8 million hid her ticket under her pillow. A Wexford family who had won $2 million in the National Lottery, they had actually put the ticket in a Michael Collins DVD case and stashed it under their bed.
Ah, so Mick took care of it for them.
Yeah, exactly. He was minding it.
Although when you think of the size and shape of a DVD case, it's pretty suitable. It'll keep it flat. No wrinkles, no spoils.
Yeah.
Just don't forget which case you put it in.
And it's probably one that people wouldn't actually look in, you know, to find anything.
Mm-hmm.
Another man in the US, he had won $250,000 and he actually just kept the ticket in a suit, in a pocket in his suit jacket in the wardrobe.
Well, don't go to a party. Gents are always picking up somebody else's suit jacket and putting it on, discovering it's the wrong size.
Someone could have went home very happy with that one.
Any others?
So we've looked up some of the best places that you could actually hide your ticket. So
wait,
the Midlands have been really lucky in the last. This is we had a €50,000 winner last week in the recent days as well. We had €500,000 last week. So it could happen.
The €500,000 was in Athlone.
In Athlone.
And the €50,000 Breslin Super Value in Rathdowney. So one of 10 people to win €50,000 on the Euro Millions only last Friday. So you can actually research this. I don't know, did she ring the crime prevention officer or how exactly she has compiled this list? But here are the 21 places that burglars are least likely to search for your lotto ticket. Away you go.
Inside toys in your children's bedroom. Inside a book, but you just need to remember which one. In the back
and the page.
In the back of a framed picture. So between the picture and the outer covering. Rolled up inside a coffee mug on the top shelf.
No, that's risky.
As we said earlier, DVD or CD case. If there's a hollowed out piece of furniture that you can actually shove it up into.
And get it back out of.
Exactly.
Or else you're ripping apart the furniture.
Stop finding flaws to my plans. Under floorboards.
Oh, no. No, whatever about taking furniture apart, replacing a whole floor, you'll spend your winnings.
Putting it in a plastic bag and putting it into a houseplant, so burying it in the soil. In the pocket of a coat hanging in your wardrobe. Buried out in the garden, but you need to mark the spot somehow.
And keep it dry.
But you put it in one of the Ziploc bags.
Yeah, and you hope it's not punctured in some way. Or there's no condensation in there.
You put it inside the service panel of your washing machine. Taped under a shelf. In a waterproof container in the toilet water tank. Or in a plastic bag inside coffee, flour, pasta, any of those kind of things.
Well, I suppose that would keep it dry, actually, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just ring Brian Clunan and get a safe.
Yeah, but then Brian might know.
And then somebody could lift the safe
if
as well.
See.
Yeah. So, what is the best advice to secure your winning lotto ticket? I hope and pray that someday you have that challenge. Little bit of good news. The increases in road tolls that were to take effect from the 1st of January are being delayed by 6 months after Cabinet reached agreement that the state would pay €12 million in additional funding to the toll provider. So if you frequently use the tolls on the M7, the M6, the M4, indeed if you end up in Dublin on the car park that is the M50, well, at least that's a little bit of relief for you. A few people have asked about muzzling dogs and what the rules are, which breeds must be muzzled. And this stems from a horrific incident in Enniscorthy over the weekend, and a 9-year-old boy continues to recover in hospital. His brother has given an interview to the Irish Independent today, which is harrowing, describes how his lower lip, his entire lower lip, has been bitten off, how he will have scarring for the rest of his life, how he is being tube-fed at the moment and is unable to swallow. The dog has been put down, but too late, and no winners in a scenario like this. Des Groom has been taking calls on this. He's a vet operating in County Kildare. Des, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
No doubt a lot of parents anxious after an incident like this. Remind us what the rules are about muzzling.
So the law is that certain breeds need to be muzzled in public. Now, as a general recommendation, I think most dogs should be muzzled in public, to be fair. And, you know, when in doubt, use a muzzle. And that would be the rule that vets use when dogs come into clinics. When in doubt, they put on a muzzle. But the law is that certain breeds have to be muzzled in public, cannot be loose in public, have to be kept on lead under the care of a person over 16 years of age. And which dogs they are is very specifically laid out. And there's a list of the breeds. Will I give you the list, Will?
Please.
Okay, so the American Pit Bull Terrier, that's the one that's been implicated in this attack in Wexford. So the American Pit Bull Terrier is that larger type of bull terrier. They're they're like a big staffy. If I say that, people will understand what I mean. They're a big staffy. They weigh between 40 and 60 kilos. So problem with them is they're too big to control. Mm. They're too big for anyone except a fit, strong, grown man. The only person able to control, to have proper control over a dog like that when and if they decide to attack. That is the problem. So the first one on the list is the American Pit Bull Terrier. Then it mentions the Bull Mastiff. Again, understandably, right? They're a dog that can have a short fuse, that can be temperamental. They have been bred as guard dogs in the past, and they're very big. Now, Mastiffs can get to, 70 kilos in weight, as big as a man. Third dog on the list, the Doberman. Again, a Doberman can be a guard dog. So a guard dog is allowed to be a guard dog in his own place, in his own yard, right? But again, a Doberman needs to be muzzled in public. Next, the English Bull Terrier, for the same reasons. Big, strong dog. The English Bull Terrier doesn't look like the Pit Bull. They're shorter, they're squatter. But they have that strength to them, but they wouldn't be as big and as athletic as a Pit Bull. Next on the list, German Shepherds. Now, again, the German Shepherd, or the Alsatian, to use the old-fashioned name, they're a guard dog, so it makes sense to muzzle them in public too. Less common breeds, the Rottweiler is the other one we're very familiar with here. Rotties and Staffies. So the six commonest ones we see a lot of here in Ireland that we're familiar with.
Yeah.
Staffordshire Bull Terriers, Rotties, German Shepherds and so on.
And there are more rare breeds such as the Japanese Akita, the Japanese Tosa, which I've never heard of, Rhodesian Ridgeback. But perhaps let's not get bogged down on the list. And what has alarmed a lot of people is how an inoffensive child could become a target in the eyes of a dog. Can you maybe give us an insight into the animal psychology?
So the psychology behind that is that usually these dogs learn respect for people, for adults, from an early age. They're descended from a fighting dog. So there's no putting a tooth in it. This is what they were bred for. Is for fighting other dogs. So they have natural aggression, which is very hard to train out of them, right? Very hard to condition away hundreds of years of breeding. Firstly, for fighting bulls, and next, when bull baiting was banned in the 1850s, for the last 150 years, unfortunately, they've been bred for underground fighting of amongst themselves, the underground dog fighting. Very, very hard for training to condition, any training to condition out 200 years of breeding. So they generally do learn a level of respect for people, and they're usually safe around adults. The difficulty is that they often don't have the same respect for children. Children move quickly and are louder and have higher pitched voices and are just more active. And oftentimes, the way children move, especially in play, can be frightening or alarming to these dogs, and they interpret it as some type of a danger or some type of a threat, and they attack. That's unfortunately what happens. It's to do with the difference between children, the way children sound and move. And of course, children are smaller.
We don't know the exact circumstances here, nor do we want to malign all of those dogs or indeed all of those owners.
No. Yeah.
But what are the lessons from incidents like this?
Well, the lessons from incidents like this is that these dogs need very, very... First of all, there needs to be more restrictions on them. And the existing laws need to be policed properly. Right? We have reasonably good dog control legislation, but it's not policed. It's the police will say they haven't time to be, chasing down dog muzzling, but we have dog wardens who are not active enough and not vigilant enough in this regard, possibly because there aren't enough dog wardens. So we need to implement the legislation we have, and the penalties for breach of legislation needs to be more severe, so that owners of these dogs understand that the consequences for misbehaviour of a dog like this, the consequences on the owner needs to be severe, and owners need to understand and be wary of and be afraid of the severity of breach of the regulations, so that they're more careful about the muzzling and training and control of these dogs.
Des, I regret we're out of time. Thank you for the call.
You're welcome, Will.
Des Groom of Groom Pet Vets in Kildare, bringing the programme to a close. It was produced by Sinead Hubble and assisted by Chloe Farrell. We'll do it all over again tomorrow morning from 9. And a final comment, good comment actually, about road tolls. Now that the state is going to compensate the toll operators and not increase their charges from the 1st of January, that means the people who don't use the tolls are now going to pay for them. Talk to you tomorrow morning from 9. Bye-bye.